This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 5:07. You're listening to the evening edition with Sharmila. So there have been allegations of sexual harassment and abuse happening to our athletes. And this highlights really a need for further investigation and further action. This is coming on the wake of a report by Malaysia Kini that spotlighted the issue of physical abuse, of sexual abuse in sports. The person who has been sort of at the forefront of all of this is Cindy Ong, a former national team swimmer, and she wants to become a catalyst of change for the entire industry. And she's been speaking about alleged sexual assault by a coach, and she talked about how the harassment and abuse continued for years. And the sad thing about this is that ever since she's spoken out, she's actually been receiving mixed responses. You know, on the one hand, there has been some amount of response from the Youth and Sports Ministry. Minister Dato Sri Rizal Marikan has ordered his officers, as well as the National Sports Council, to contact and to assist her in speaking out about what had happened. However, the pushback or the negative reactions that she has received include obscene comments online. She was even sent a lewd video, just essentially putting her on the spot and targeting her for voicing out and speaking out about this, as well as the general sort of abuse that many women in the public eye receive almost as a matter of course. And I think why this, why her speaking up about this is sort of throwing light on an issue that has been happening for a while, is that firstly, our in general sports and the coaching system, the way that training is conducted tends to be a fairly opaque and closed scene for many of us. We entrust athletes often at a very young age to coaches, to trainers, and a lot of there isn't essentially a lot of power and a lot of control that these people have over them. And particularly when it comes to female athletes, not only do they then become vulnerable to people within the system who may have predatorial intent, they're also put in the public eye and are at the receiving end of many sorts of harassment and comments from the public as well. So it leads to a really toxic environment that they are forced to operate in. And so I think Cindy speaking up about this is a necessary catalyst for more reform, better investigation into the scene. And I just wanted to point out that when it comes to these sorts of allegations, this really isn't the first time that they've come to light. So in looking at just swimming alone, in the 90s, former national team coach C. Ramanathan was charged with molesting two junior athletes. He was initially sentenced to 4 years in prison after being convicted, but his jail time was reduced and he was released in 2011 after appeals. In 2017, former national diving coach Huang Qian was charged with raping a diving athlete. And then in 2020, the KL High Court acquitted and discharged Huang on the grounds that reasonable doubt was raised against that charge. That is when it comes to allegations of abuse. But when we look at that larger ecosystem that a lot of female athletes exist in, take, for example, the case of gymnast Farah and Abdul Hadi. In 2015, she was criticized, for instance, for not covering up when she won gold in the SEA Games. She had multiple comments of an unsavory nature hurled at her when she should have been lauded for her victory. She even had people in power commenting about the way she was dressed. For instance, the Perak Mufti Harusani Zakaria, who said that gymnastics was not for Muslim women. We had PKR Lumut MP Imran Abdul Hamid talking about it in Parliament and said that sexy attire worn by athletes could lead to illicit sex. So these sorts of things really create a very difficult environment for athletes, particularly female athletes. And that's what we wanted to look at today. This sort of environment of this environment that they're forced to contend with, and how we can better protect our athletes from incidents of abuse, whether physical or sexual. And we'd like to hear from you. What are your thoughts on this? How can we better protect our athletes from abuse? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018 789 8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up after this, we will be speaking to Cindy Ong herself, former national swimmer, and who hopes to shed some light on these cases in the sports industry here in Malaysia. So keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Building fit Malaysians, BFM 89.9.
It is 5:13. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Sharmila. Today, we're looking at incidents of abuse in our national sports system. And this is coming on the wake of former national swimmer Cindy Ong speaking up about her own experiences with abuse during the course of her career. Cindy will be joining us shortly to speak to us personally, but we'd like to hear from you. How can we better protect our athletes from abuse? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018 789 8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're now joined by Cindy Ong, former national swimmer. She is a 7-time gold medalist at the FINA World Championship Masters category. She's also the current world number one in women's 50 meter freestyle. Cindy, good to have you with us on the show. Could you start by telling us about yourself? What got you into swimming, and what was it like training as a young swimmer?
I started swimming when I was 5, and I guess it was a very natural thing to do because my auntie was one of the first Malaysian female to represent Malaysia in the Olympics in the 1972 Munich Olympic Games. My brother is a 2-time Olympian. He swam in 2000 and 2004. So kind of naturally, I was put into swimming as a very young girl. And it wasn't really me who chose the sport. I guess the sport chose me. I grew up in Ipoh. And my brother swam, my uncle swam, my auntie swam. And it was just more like it was expected that everybody swam. And one thing led to another, winning just an age group championship to national level and international level after that.
Cindy, you've spoken about your experiences being sexually harassed. Could you share when that began and what has it been like over the years?
Oh, this is a very long answer to this. And I guess the very first time I experienced it, I was still a very young teenage girl. I think I was 13. And it happened in one of the meets overseas when he was assigned as a coach. So he's not a national coach. And I wasn't in the national team at that time when this first happened. But this went on for many years, right? So the very first time it happened, he was the assigned coach to one of the international competition that we went to. And he sat beside me, asking me to go to sleep, to take a nap. And then, you know, started patting me. And when his hands touched here, and I just started moving around, you know. So as a very young child and athlete at that time, I didn't know how to react. It's definitely non-consensual. But I was put in an extremely uncomfortable position to say no because we were alone. And right now, I guess a lot of people are asking me, why now? Why after so many years, why are you bringing this up now? And one of the biggest reasons why I am bringing this up actually is thanks to Ayan. She's really the brave one. And after she brought it up, and then Malaysians started to find out that, wow, this is actually more rampant than we used to think. And because she spoke up, I decided, you know, it's time because I'm not the only victim. Now, I understand that there's nothing much I can do about my case because it's more like a he say, she say thing. And I'm not naming the perpetrator, which has been a huge backlash on myself because I refuse to name him. Because I can be sued for defamation. It's going to be a ping pong ball where things don't go anywhere. But what I can do, what's within my control, is then to voice out and raise more awareness so that I can help other people, potential victims, or, you know, so that rules are set in place. Maybe if this happens again, that things can be done and actions can be taken.
You mentioned that this happened to you when you were very young. Were there any mechanisms or avenues at all for you to be able to raise this issue?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. If you rewind and jog our memories back to 20, 25 years ago, if you jog back to that era, there's no social media. And at that age, if you think back and you are in a 13-year-old body, a 13-year-old, not now, but a 13-year-old back then, there's no social media. And I didn't have that kind of relationship with my parents to tell my parents. And it's not something that you would tell your friends. It's just kind of shameful. Like, oh, he touched my breast. I can't say that. It's shameful. So, you know, you just kind of keep it to yourself. And you can't really tell officials because no one's going to trust a 13-year-old, especially if the perpetrator is someone of power.
And since you shared your experiences, what kind of reactions have you received?
Okay, so I think the support that I've gotten, a lot of it is just from the public. And I'm very happy to see that there are people who, in fact, wholeheartedly support me and say that, yes, you know, it's indeed a great thing that I spoke up and that I'm empowering other women or even just inspiring someone else to come up and talk about it. I feel like Malaysia is kind of divided into two teams, the progressive and the oppressive. A lot of Malaysians want Malaysia to progress and not to have any of these setbacks and start thinking back in Jurassic era, like victim blaming, but it still exists. And then there's the other part where, yes, we want to oppress the people as much as we can so we can stay in power. So I think there's two camps, basically, and a lot of my supporters and haters are basically based in these two camps.
So you've mentioned in other interviews that this is a taboo subject. Do you see this changing? What can we do to encourage more openness around it?
Definitely a lot more awareness on it. So I am a big advocate now. I'm trying to go on as many talks as possible so that I can have a wider reach of audience because it's still very taboo and a lot of people are still not receptive. I'm not just talking about men. I'm talking about women themselves. They are still not very accepting of this subject. Let me give an example. Actually, when I first talked about it to Malaysia Kini, my mom came back and told me, because my mom was raised in the era where, you know, all the stereotypical traits of a woman, you stay home and you know, you don't speak up and that kind of everything that's associated with that. And so she asked me, girl, why did you say such shameful things to the media? You know, it's still that. And she didn't realize that I actually kind of started a movement. We need to speak up until her friends around her, people in church were telling her, oh, you know, your daughter is doing a good thing. She's spreading. And then she's like, oh, really? But I thought she's, you know, it's really bad for her to talk about these things to the media and in public. So even someone like my mom, she wouldn't know. And we need to have a lot more education to let people know it's okay. And there are people who are going to back you up. There are NGOs. There are a lot of people who are willing to help as long as you say help.
So getting back to that athletic system, right? Coaches and athletes often have a close relationship. And I'd imagine that this places young athletes in a particularly vulnerable position. I mean, exactly as you described, what kind of protections are in place at the moment? And what do we need in order to draw clearer boundaries?
So there's this thing called safe sport. If you just look it up, there's a whole entire guideline on what safe sport is. It applies to all the sports. So every single sport will have their own guidelines. So for example, just a few that I know, like coaches there are certain body parts that you are allowed to touch, there's certain body parts that you're not allowed to touch, certain attire that is permissible. So Malaysia, there's no such guideline at all. So anybody, anything, it's anything goes. So we need safe sport and we need to have someone who's a strong believer and just to advocate and push this through.
And what role do other adult figures play when it comes to ensuring that people feel empowered to draw those boundaries and also to report when issues do arise? Because I'm thinking, for example, you know, family members or teachers.
Yeah, I think that family members, adults, teachers definitely have a role to play. So I never thought about this before, but now as a mother of three, and I have a young daughter, I have two young boys, and I'm thinking to myself, it is also my responsibility to teach my kids that, look, if mommy touches your butt, it's okay. But if somebody else touches your butt, it's not okay. Because, you know, in a home setting, everybody gets comfortable and we hug, but it's just like, it's so normal. So they might go out thinking that that is normal too. So I guess it is the parents' responsibility to then educate the kids that, look, these are the safe zones. Touches like this are okay. Touches like that are not okay. And you need to report it. So the education starts from home. But what I truly, really believe in is a nationwide awareness. Of course, it starts in one household. But if your household does it, my household does it, there's only two of us. And if, you know, now we have BFM listeners doing it. But we need a nationwide approach to have a wider reach. Because no matter what we are doing right now, I think it's the majority of Klang Valley that we're covering, but not to the greater Malaysia. I'm not sure if you remember, like, when we had dengue problem. So we were educating people to not have water tanks left at home and not have water sitting around. And, you know, just stuff like that. Don't breed the mosquitoes from the top down. And it even reached to all the kampong and all the villages. And there's a massive reach. And I think this needs to be along those lines.
Cindy, you've also mentioned that you've continued to hear stories and allegations about that coach who assaulted you, assaulting other athletes. And really, this is something we've seen in many industries and spaces, right? Of abusers being protected and even continuing to work and thrive in spaces where there are stories about them. Why do you think this is the case and what can we do about it?
I think it's he is quite a successful person in the industry, and he's been around for a long time. So people are not willing to speak up against him. So I think because he's in a position of power. So, you know, right now I no longer represent a country. So it's easier for me to speak up because the ramification isn't going to be as heavy, I guess. What can we do about it? Well, I guess if we have safe sport in place, it's more of, you know, we're proactively trying to prevent this from happening rather than a reactive measure of trying to punish whoever who did whatever things.
Cindy, in closing, what's next? What are you hoping to come out of this?
I want to push the sexual harassment bill to be tabled because it's not just about naming this one perpetrator. Because there are so many of him in the country. And I want to cast a much wider net than just catching one person.
Cindy, thanks so much for speaking with us. That was former national swimmer Cindy Ong sharing with us her own experiences of being sexually harassed and facing abuse during her career, as well as the kind of reactions she's been getting after she's come out with it. And we'd like to hear from you. How can we better protect our athletes from abuse? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Keep it here on The Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.